You're listening to audio from The Village Church. If you'd like to check out more resources or give to our ministry, please visit us at thevillagechurch.net.
Good morning, friends. I am Juliana Wooten, and I am on staff serving as a care resident. And I'm so excited that in my position, I get to build out a disability care ministry for The Village Church. Today's scripture is Philippians 4:4-8. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say, rejoice. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Hey, good morning. If you have your Bibles, go ahead and grab those. I just want to kind of walk us through this passage, almost phrase by phrase. If you don't have a Bible, there's a hardback black one in the seat underneath you. If you'd like a nicer one, maybe for the holidays, you can visit the Lost and Found on your way out, and you might even find yours there. And so while you're turning there, this week, it's always weighty. For our family. It's great. It's like we play hard. We laugh a lot. But there's always some weight that kind of follows it. We never know who or when we might get ambushed by our history. On November 26, 2009, I think most of you will know this, not all of you will, but Lauren let me sleep in, and I was able to, which lets you know I'm tired. And I got up, and she was making dishes in the kitchen. We were planning to have Thanksgiving with my in-laws who lived about 8 minutes from us, and that was going to happen later that afternoon. And so I asked if I could help, and she said, would you feed Nora her bottle? Nora's about 6 months old, and I'm happy to do that, and fed Nora her bottle, burped her carefully. She had the habit of giving you back what you put in her. And so I was pretty careful about the burp. I had the, like, in my hand burp going, not over my shoulder burp going. And then, because I'm the husband, I went and put her in her Johnny Jump Up. And then I had a cup of coffee back in the living room, both Reed and Audrey. Audrey was 6, Reed was 4. They were watching cartoons. If I could out myself, it was SpongeBob SquarePants. And I know some of you think that SpongeBob is evil and Christians shouldn't watch that. I found him to be completely, eternally optimistic, and I kind of liked that about him. And so the kids were watching SpongeBob SquarePants, and I put Nora in her Johnny Jump Up, and I turned to go back to my chair. And somewhere between the Johnny Jump Up and the chair, which was only about 12 feet, I had a grand mal seizure. Hit my face on the mantle, biting through my tongue, fell on the floor in front of my kids, and seized for about 3 or 4 minutes. When I was seizing, my leg apparently was kicking the fireplace pokers, and Lauren heard the fall in the kitchen, but it's not, if you can pick up on my energy, it's not abnormal for things to crash and for things to clink and bang in the Chandler house. We all kind of have a little frenetic energy, maybe especially back then. And so Lauren was waiting to hear me say, it's okay. And instead, she heard Audrey say, Mom. And so Lauren came into the room. She turned me on my side. She dialed 911 and the ambulance and fire. We lived, 2 minutes from there. And so they were at our house in no time at all. Apparently, when I was coming out of the seizure, I was combative. I think, because I don't have any memory of this, people have made it legend and not true, lore and not true. And so apparently I punched one of the paramedics and they injected me with something, which is why I don't have any memory of that little episode at our house. So I wake up in the hospital. They'd already run a scan or two on me. Again, I don't have, my memories pick up a little bit later. And I remember the doctor at Medical City Louisville, he pulled his stool up next to my bed and said, "We have found a golf ball size mass in your right frontal lobe. We're gonna need you to go see a surgeon." If I'm honest there, the floor did not fall out underneath me. I don't know why, but I just wanted to leave the hospital. I had been there all day. There was no Thanksgiving for us that day. The whole family's in the waiting room. A pastor friend of mine tweeted it out, and so the village found out because that jackhole didn't let us and my family control the narrative. He controlled it. And I'm fine. I'm over that. I don't even know why I said that. And so I go to the surgeon just a couple of days later. And they let me know, no, this doesn't look good at all. We need to do surgery on Friday. A week later, we're going to need to do surgery. And then he tried to encourage me by telling me that he knew, you know, he'd had a patient that had made it 10 years. And I'm going, I'm 38. What do you mean 10 years? That it was not encouraging. And so end up having the craniotomy, ends up being malignant brain tumor, anaplastic oligodendroglioma, WHO grade 3 was the diagnosis. So from there, rehab after surgery, and then 18 months of high-dose chemotherapy with a little radiation sprinkled in. Gave me 2 to 3 years to live. I oftentimes remind Dr. Fink, who's my neuro-oncologist, that math can lie and God doesn't. And here we are 15 years later. But that, yeah, we can celebrate that. I'm glad to be here. But that has created weight in our family in the best way and in the weirdest way, because we never actually know when it will hit. I think last year, or maybe it was the year before last, I was just sitting on the couch with Nora watching the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. We've graduated from SpongeBob SquarePants. And then I just got overwhelmed, didn't want to freak her out. So walked into the kitchen and hugged Lauren and just wept for 10 minutes. And then like to break up this tear fest with some fun, I didn't know we were here yet, but I got to get Nora, my youngest child, her car this week, and got to surprise her with that. And so she was training at DBAT over in Louisville. They've got a great program for athletes, not just baseball players. It's like just for her goals, just for like a, it's beautiful. And so I got her car and drove there, and then walked in, waited for her. And then she was like, "Can I drive home?" Which is what most 15-year-olds ask when they've got their permit. And I was like, "Absolutely." And so we walked out into the parking lot. She was like, "Where's your truck?" And I was like, "Well, why wouldn't you want to drive your car?" "What? Why wouldn't you want to?" And then she was like, freaked out like a 15-year-old girl would. And then we're just driving home. And I just had the thought, God, I'm glad to be here for this. And so the way the timeline worked for us as a church, just so you can place it on our map, is we were over at the HV campus running 6 services a weekend, and we bought this place, just the Albertsons at the time. And we had retrofitted it and all of it was done. And so we did a run-through service the Sunday afternoon at like 3 o'clock before we moved in here and gave it a real go. And I preached that. That next week was Thanksgiving, had the seizure on Thanksgiving. And then I didn't know after they looked at the MRI if I would ever see you again, if I'd ever get to talk to you again. It's right frontal lobe, which is, they call it the silent hemisphere, but it's where you do your spatial reasoning. It's where you take an idea and you look at it and then you file it away. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's my job description. That is what I do. I study and read the Bible and I look at it from different angles and I organize it. And so I didn't know how I would wake up. And so I shot you a video. That video is actually still on YouTube. And I said, I want to walk my daughters down the aisle. And I want to watch my son become a man. And you're good, and I trust you, and my life is yours, but I want these things, Lord. And I wanted you to know that I wanted those things, and I wanted you to join me in praying for those things. And so this week's one where I never know who's going to get ambushed by the memories of that, who's going to, and it's not, it's tender, it's not bad, it's really beautiful. I'm really grateful, and simultaneously would like to never do anything like that again. And so heading into the week, one of the ways that I want to serve you is I want to try to give you the gift, or the Bible wants to give you the gift of joy and gratitude detached from life circumstances. I think this is important because we live in an age of anxiety. And all over this room right now, there's anxiety and depression. And there's no shame in that. It's just the reality of the day we live in. And for some of us, we're going into this week, and we just know it's going to be a beautiful week. Others of us are going into this week, and we know it's going to be a hard week. And so I thought what I might do today is give us, from the text, the gift of joy and gratitude. And so with that said, let's look at this passage together. This is Philippians 4. We're going to pick it up in verse 4. Rejoice in the Lord. What's the word? Always. Always? Always. So I did some Greek work for us, because certainly that doesn't mean always, and it means always. Rejoice in the Lord always. And because he knows, we like say what? He repeats himself. Let me say it again. Rejoice. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything. Right? Don't be anxious about anything. Once again, the Greek, they didn't mess up in this translation. It's anything. All of it? All of it. What about this? Yeah, that. What about this? Yeah, that too. What about this thing down here? Especially that. What about this thing up there? Yeah, that too. This is, don't be anxious about anything, but then in everything. Do you see those words? Those words matter. Anything, everything. No matter what, that's it. What are we meant to do? The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your request be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard or hold or keep your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about these things. So let me structure the passage, and then we dive in. You've got these commands here that are hard, right? You've got this rejoice in everything. And then it's bookended there in verse 7 with let the peace of God keep your mind and your heart. And this is where I'm grateful. Well, let me say it this way. Those are going to be pretty difficult. Like joy and peace, they're difficult to come by in 2024. Maybe they've always been difficult to come by, but they're especially difficult to come by in 2024. I was reading this article that it was really a study that the NIH put out. That's the National Institute of Health. And they said 90% of our messaging is bent to the negative. That means 90% of your inputs are bent to the negative. Now, why? Well, the article didn't say why, but I have an idea. And it has to do with this command to let your reasonableness be seen by everyone. What makes the economy run right now isn't dollars, it's attention. That you and I live in an attention economy, which means everyone's vying for your eyeballs. Everyone's vying for your attention. They can't sell you squat unless they get your attention. And so the whole game of marketing right now, whether it's social media or other kinds of media, is like, how do we get your attention? How does your news source get you to pay attention? How did the ads grab you and take hold of you? Well, the best way to provoke human attention and money is through fear, anger, and disruption. And NIH is going, this is the issue. The issue is 90% of that is bent towards the negative. It's meant to make you concerned. It's to make you angry. It's to frustrate you. That's the bent of the messaging of our day. And then you throw on top of that that the nature in most human beings is to bend inward. Then we're hopelessly stuck on ourselves, constantly aware of what we don't have, where we failed, where we messed up. And then there's all these pretty pictures and imageries of people doing much better than us, right, on social. And this creates the age of anxiety. It's literally what they're calling this period of human history we're in, the age of anxiety. That's what sociologists are going, this is how this is defined. Now, what I love about the Bible is the Bible's never going to jam us up by kind of asking us to do something. It doesn't then show us how that's going to come about. And what you see in this passage, these are the two bookends, right? Rejoice, peace. Joy and peace. And just so you understand, when I say joy, I'm not talking about happiness. Happiness is fragile. It's attached to life circumstances. It can be taken from you in a second. Joy is different than that. Joy is detached from life circumstances. It can be present in the most hard, brutal scenario imaginable. And so Jesus isn't saying, be happy. And again, I say to you, be happy, because there are things that are going to happen in life that aren't happy. But the offer is not happiness, but joy. Joy, something deeper, something stronger, something that can be built upon. And so the Bible's going to give us in this passage two things: a place to go and a discipline to practice. A place to go and a discipline to practice. If you're type A and you take notes, there you go. There's your outline. Now, with that said, let's dive back into this. The first is a place to go. So let's look back at the top of our text. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. I left this part out. Another reason why messaging can be negative is it takes you out of your prefrontal cortex. If I can make you feel fear, if I can make you anxious, if I can make you angry, you're no longer thinking clearly. Right? So this is all a game that you need to be aware of, and be aware of things and places and inputs that are seeking to provoke you in ways to eradicate reasonableness and replace it with just kind of disjointed living from your stomach rather than living unto the Lord. But let's keep going in the text. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication. I'm just going to stop there. So point one is that you and I have a place to go. How are we going to live in joy? How are we going to walk in rejoicing? Well, we have a place to go. Here's the argument. Hey, the Lord is at hand, comma, then. I don't know why. I don't have time for this, but the numbering system in the Bible is janky as all get out. Like, why did the friar who did this, who was actually kind of infamous for stopping at the pubs and popping back a few before he added the numbers, that is not a lie. That is how this happened. Like, if you're looking at the text, the Lord is at hand, semicolon, do not be anxious about anything. But he, I guess, two pints in, like, put it up with verse 5. Is this too much for you guys? I feel like you're new here or something. Like, did he say that? Yeah, I'm going to say far more than that. So you're going to have to relax. I mean, we're here to worship the Lord, and we're just in the book, right? So the Lord is at hand. Don't be anxious. You have a place to go. You have someone to go to. This is the big message of the Bible. Let me say it this way. You have never been abandoned by God. I am not saying that you have not been in the valley of the shadow of death. I'm saying He didn't abandon you there. And if you remember that great psalm of David, it was, I will not fear when I walk through the valley in the shadow of death, not because I've got my suppressed AR down there, but for thou art with me. By the way, that illustration only works in Texas. I was in San Francisco a couple weeks ago, would have never used that one there. That would have emptied the room in a weird way, all right? But here I felt safe. I felt like most rooms like, yeah, I've got mine now in my backpack. But here, like, why are we not afraid? Because we haven't been abandoned. Why are we not anxious? For thou art with me. Right? We have a place to go, and it's this place to go that I want to talk about. How do we get to this place? How do we not be anxious because we have this place to go in Jesus? Well, there's two words used here. They're synonymous, but one gives us the kind that we're supposed to do. So he says, but in everything by prayer and supplication. So let's talk about prayer first. This is Hebrews 4:16. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace. Why? That we may receive mercy and find grace to help in a time of need. So the command to pray is this command to confidently come before God. For what reason? To get grace and mercy. When? When it ain't going well. When things aren't going the way they thought. When we did get the phone call. When the diagnosis didn't go the way we were hoping. When things went differently than we planned. When we're disoriented and the sickness won't leave and the financial hardships keep piling up and the tension in our relationships won't seem to give way. Grace, mercy, time of need, confidence. And then the next verse I want to read to you is why so few of us do. Look at Matthew 18:2-3. This is Jesus, and calling to him a child, he put him in the midst of them and said, truly, I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, why am I saying that? Here on prayer, because some of you won't go to God with your anxiety because you're too grown. You're too grown. So you'll handle it, you'll make it happen, and you'll be disciplined enough, and you'll gird up your loins. I'm a man, I'm not asking for help. Well, good luck with that, bro. There are powers and principalities and things at play that all the creatine and squat racks in the world won't help you survive. All right, this is just the truth. Come to me like a child. Children never worry about asking mom and dad to carry stuff. And all my parents said, you know how many times I was at a park or Six Flags or a fair, and I tried to tell my three small children, you don't need that. Well, I might need it. And then what happens like 4 minutes in? Will you carry this? Never. I shouldn't have brought it. Never. I'll carry it. It's like, carry. In fact, will you carry me? But a kid doesn't, he just is going to ask. She's just going to ask. He's like a child, don't be grown. I can carry this. You can't bring this to me. This will crush you and I can hold it. Come to me. And then he talks about the kind of prayer. So the word used here is supplication. It means petition. It means to honestly ask. Now, when I was sick, I found myself caught between two theological tribes. Let me try to describe them. The first is the stream I'm happily in. It's the Reformed community. If you don't know what that means, that's fine. But I'm a happy Reformed guy. I'm not angry about it. I'm just really glad that God saves, and I expect him to do it and believe that he will. And those guys, they were just like they, in their theological framework, you just ask God for his will. That's all you do. You just ask God for his will. God, if it be your will you heal me? If it be your will you work in my life? If it be your will you do this? Will you do that? Will you do this? And anything other than that is presuming upon the Lord. That's trash theology. Like even in James, gosh, in the Bible, James says, is any of you sick? Let him call the elders. Let him anoint him with oil and pray, and the prayer and confession of the saint will heal your diseases. But then there was this other camp I'll tell you exactly who it was. Actually, one of my first Sundays back, I just came up here. I wasn't preaching yet. Just came and sat up here, and this young man was over here, and he just walked up to me, and he was tears and snot, and it felt to me like my situation was harder on him than it was on me. And he came up from a Pentecostal background, mom and dad Pentecostal, grandma and grandpa Pentecostal. I love me some aspects of Pentecostal theology. There's just some of it that, man, I'm just never going to be more Reformed than the Bible and never going to be more Pentecostal than the Bible, and that's probably a good place to be. And so he came to me and he just said, hey, my mom and dad said that if you won't believe and like publicly state that Jesus is going to heal you, then you're going to die. And I don't want you to die. And I was like, well, okay, I'm not, be gracious with me because my filter's not quite right yet, but that's terrible. One, don't put my healing on me like it's my faith that heals me. And so don't put some name it, claim it on me. That's a crushing thing to put on a person who's sick. If you'll just muster faith, you'll be healed. Nonsense. But so then I'm stuck between these two worlds. And in reality, if we're going to take the Bible seriously, we're meant to ask God for what we want and keep our hands open. He's the King of glory. He's the sovereign over all things. God decides, not me mustering up faith or believing harder. That's cruel. But to go, I want to live. You're better. I believe you're better. I believe to depart and be with you is best. But I want to walk my girls down the aisle. And I want to watch my son become a man. I'm trying to put some things in my bloodline to death that haunted my daddy and haunted his daddy and haunted his daddy and haunted his daddy. And you pick me up out of the muck and the mire, and you put my feet on a rock, and you put a new song in my mouth, and you put a love for this little boy in my heart. And I want him to have different issues than the issues. I want him to fight different monsters than the monsters we've been fighting for. Will you give this to me? And I want it, and I want you to give it to me. And that's not an unbiblical request. And if you think it is, my guess is you're too grown. Because children never care about asking, even if it's selfish. You ever have, if you're a parent or been around kids, you ever have that day where you're just like, yes, 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 here, 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 here. And then it's like 9:30 at night, and they want like a 2-pound bag of Sour Patch Kids, and you're like, I'm afraid not. Oh, come on! You ever experienced that? Okay, so remember what Jesus says. You want the kingdom? You want joy? You want gratitude? You want to understand life? Just lay that out there. Now let me give this caveat. There are things that are real in us that we need to bring into Jesus with great confidence in his grace, and in time his truth will correct. So if it was immature, which I don't think it was, for me to ask of the Lord to walk my girls down the aisle, to help my son become a man, and still up there with all of that, not let some other man marry my wife. Oh, really? Oh, you love that idea, huh? I didn't like it. And so I want these. I want these things. And if that was immature, and I don't think it was, then like a good father in time, he would replace my real experience with the truth of that experience. You tracking with me? So we come to him. And this is all over the Bible. I'm going way longer than I need to, and I'm not going to care. Let's do this. Let's look at Mark 10, 51 and 52. And Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" And the blind man said to him, "Rabbi, let me recover my sight." And Jesus said to him, "How selfish are you? There are other people that are blind. There are other people that have it harder than you. There are other people who are crippled here in ways that are greater than your blindness." No, none of that is there. What did he say? And Jesus said to him, "Go your way. Your faith has made you well." And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him on the way. And I could talk about David as it looked like his son was going to die. Plead for the life of his son. Jesus asked his disciples repeatedly, what do you want me to do? Supplication is coming to Jesus and saying, this is what I want you to do. We've got a place to go. And if you've been in church too long and you haven't been around people who are outside the kingdom, they don't have this. They don't have a place to go. They turn to other things. We have a place to go. We have Christ himself to go to. And then we have one another, the tangible presence of Christ, to walk us through the valley of the shadow of death. We have a place to go and a discipline to practice. Let's look back at the text. But in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, that's our discipline to practice, let your requests be made known to God. Jump down to verse 8. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. One of my favorite things about being a Bible guy, and what I mean by that is I've spent 30-something years professionally studying the Bible, is when science catches up to the Bible. I'm telling you, I will do, there'll be a standalone sermon one day where I just show you articles where science has just discovered stuff that we've known for thousands of years. Like one of my favorites of all times came out like 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago now, where they're like, okay guys, here's what we've discovered. If you take one day a week, just one, and you set that day aside and you don't work on that day, and you just rest and feast and do things that make your heart happy and play, and everything else gets better. And I'm like, the Sabbath? You're talking about the Sabbath? Because that's in the Ten Commandments, bro. That's like 4,000 or 5,000 years old for us. But they just discovered it. Well, because we're in an age of anxiety, there are a lot of studies being done, sociological studies being done right now on gratitude. Like you can Google it, you can watch TED Talks on it. We're starting to unlock this gratitude thing. Like the study I read this week came out of the University of California, Berkeley. And I'm guessing most of us aren't thinking, I bet some good conservative theological depth comes out of Berkeley. Yeah, well, yes, because what Romans tells us is the Gentiles will do the law sometimes without even knowing it. And so they'll unlock the way God wired the universe and the human biochemistry to work. And so they did this massive study on gratitude. Here's how they're defining the two-step process of gratitude. This is Robert Emmons and Michael McAuliffe. Step one, recognize that one has obtained a positive outcome. Step two, recognizing that there's an external source for this positive outcome. They go on and then describe gratitude as the social glue of humanity and the key to building and nurturing strong, deep relationships. And then they did this study. This is fascinating. They took a ton of people, like thousands of people, who struggle with melancholy. They struggle with depression. They struggle with anxiety. And here's what they did to them. They gave them a journal and a pen. And they said 3 to 5 minutes, 5-6 days a week, we want you to write a list of things you're grateful for. That's it. 3 to 5 minutes a day, write out things that you're grateful for. And here's what happened. It literally reshapes and rewires the brain. Let's go through some of this, right? This is the science around 3 to 5 minutes a day, just making a list of things that you're grateful for. Here's the first. The way they said it in their study was this. By focusing on tailwinds rather than headwinds, the brain is changed. Here's how. Then when we know what we're grateful for, and we do this little exercise, the wires and fire, what this does is it wires and fires new neural connections to the bliss center of the brain. Anybody knew they had a bliss center? Man, I'm hoping it's not the right frontal lobe, but that's a bliss center. Wherever that is, I like that word. Turn up the bliss. How do you do that? Well, you've got to be grateful. It fosters cognitive restructuring by evoking positive thinking. It literally restructures the brain. It cuts and creates new neuropathways. It reduces fear and anxiety by regulating and the stress hormones. And then listen to this one, because this one's huge in the wellness community. It enhances dopamine and serotonin. These are the neurotransmitters responsible for happiness. If you see on your Instagram feed or on anything on wellness, it's about these. How do we increase dopamine? How do we increase serotonin? How do we increase gladness and sleep better? And this is like, nothing works quite like gratitude. And listen, we're hungry for these two chemicals in our brains. You got dudes dipping themselves in 22-degree water for 3 to 5 minutes. You've got, I mean, all this stuff. And I'm not hating on the ice bath. I've got one. I'm just saying, what if we did our gratitude journal while soaking in that water? Pa, pa, pa. I mean, you just take on a whole army. I mean, that'd be incredible. Like, you want more dopamine? You want more serotonin? You want feelings of gladness and deep sleep? Cultivate gratitude. Cultivate gratitude. It creates positive recall. What they mean by that is, even in the hard things, you'll look back and start seeing silver linings. Even in the hard things, you'll start looking back and seeing silver linings. It deepens resilience. It boosts immunity, specifically around heart health, reducing blood pressure. It makes stronger connections, which makes sense. Like, if you're seeing through the lens of gratitude, and not annoyance, you're seeing through the lens of strength in someone and not weakness in someone, that's going to aid in connection. But if you're bent towards cynicism and you've given in to the negativity of our age, you're jaded, which means you're focusing on what people don't do and haven't done and can't do and the things that annoy you. And what we're learning in neuroscience is, if you see that, but you do the extra work to find the good deposit in people, you'll move towards them and they'll move towards you. In the marriage series, I said it like this: you should be a subject matter expert on the strengths of your spouse, not where they're falling short. And so for this, I would just expand that out. You should be a subject matter expert on the strengths and good deposits of God in people. And then the last thing is that it leads to better communication. Of course it does. Better connection always leads to better communication. And if that communication is words of affirmation, how much deeper now the connection? How much deeper now the connection? If I see your strength and then I praise your strength, I know that words of affirmation is not everyone's love language, but nobody hates it. It's no one's rage button, right? Like, the way to push the button on your spouse or loved one is not to praise them for some strength in them. I'm just telling you. So what does this do? Seeing through these lenses, right? This is how this works, and this is the discipline that has to be cultivated. And so I could show you how that discipline is cultivated. Look at verse 8. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about these things. Here, let's make some eye contact. You control what you think. You control. You choose what you think. Think of a ship right now. Could you do that? Anybody like, no, you just thought of a ship. You control, which means you control whether or not you're thinking, dwelling on whatever's the opposite of that list. You choose what you think about over and over and over. Nobody talks to you as much as you talk to you. No one. No one talks to you like you talk to you. What are you saying to yourself? What are you getting stuck in? What's the loop that you get stuck in? Well, by and large, the data says we're getting stuck in negative loops. We're not believing the best about people. We're filling in gaps negatively. Even when we see something good, we're cynical about their motive. Like, how are we supposed to have deep connection if that's our base? How are we supposed to have deep connection and meaningful communication if we can't give the benefit of the doubt and see the beauty that God's put in people made in his image? 3 to 5 minutes a day writing out things that you're grateful for. I know life's busy. Listen, I don't have time in my life. It'd blow my whole life up. I had to add an hour of work on one day or another. Like, I don't have that in my life, but 3 to 5 minutes? And there's something about writing it. There's like a pathway, like writing to mind. And so the study was very, like, you need to write it. Now, I like to play fun games in the car and at the dinner table where we talk about these things, like things that we're most grateful for today. Not 48 hours ago, not 6 months ago, and I don't want to harken back to 32 years when I became a Christian. Like today, what has he done today? What can I be grateful for today? What am I glad about today? And then I want to write them down. And it's just a simple little add-on to my time in the Word and prayer. It's 3 to 5 minutes, not 45. And then for the longest time, guys, if I'm honest, it'd be like, you know, today would look like yesterday's. And then the next day would look like the day before. And then the next, and then I tried to exercise the discipline of, no. I'm going to try to make it different every day. And I'm going to try to limit it to 24 hours. I don't want to go, oh, wasn't this beautiful 2 weeks ago? Is that there's been no goodness in the last 2 weeks. And so my journal, when I die and somebody reads my journal, I might try to figure out a way for it to destroy itself so that doesn't, but they're like, man, I'll get that way about the taste of a steak, about fire pit nights on the back patio. That's a gift. One of mine on the list this morning was yesterday I did a workout with Lauren at the CrossFit box and still got a little CrossFit cough going on and my body hurts, but I had the physical strength to do that. I haven't always had strength like that. Like I had a 2-year period of time where I wondered if I'd ever be strong again. But I got to work out with my wife and it was awesome and awful. And then I was thinking this morning, as my lats are a little, those dumbbell snatches will kill a man. And I just kind of wrote in my journal, hey, thank you. Thank you for the physical strength to work out with Lauren yesterday. Now, and thank you that Nora has found this group of girls who are good girls who love you and they're encouraging her and they want the same thing she wants. And like you want that for your kids. We prayed for that. God gave that. They were at my house last night giggling up a storm. I couldn't even try to explain to me what they were cackling about and I still couldn't figure it out. But I'm glad that the sound of cackling teenage girls were coming down the stairwell at our house, and I could just hear it be grateful. I was on my list this morning. I love black good coffee. I mean, I'd love it. It might be a problem. You should pray for your pastor. You're not supposed to be mastered by anything, and that stuff be calling me. And it's on my journal this morning. Getting to preach to you. It's on my journal this morning. Like, I didn't know if I'd ever get to do this. I didn't know how I'd wake up. I didn't know how this is a gift. Get to do that. I can't believe this is my life. Like, I was heading to law school. I'd be so miserable right now. And he was like, no, he just has taken care of me in a billion ways, seen and unseen. And so here's what I want to give you. I want to give you about a minute here. I'm going to just pray for us because the promise here at the very end there in verse 7 is that the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Quick question. How much peace do you think God has? He's omnipresent everywhere at once. He's omniscient. He knows all things. And he's omnipotent. He's all powerful. How much peace do you think he has? Can I answer it for you? All of it. All your anxieties and fears are built on you not having one of those. You're not all powerful. You're not all knowing. You're not everywhere at once. But he is. Which is so great that he's the place that we get to go. And so the text is saying, you want a life marked by joy? You want a life where your heart and mind are kept, they're held by God? You want the kind of peace that surpasses understanding, the kind of peace that doesn't make sense for your circumstances? You have a place and you have a discipline to cultivate. And so I just want to give you literally a minute, 1 minute. I'm going to just give you 1 minute. And I'd love for you to just think about the last 24 hours. And I'd love for you to just begin to thank God under your breath or out loud. It's up to you. Just thank God for those little gifts. Please don't go back to your salvation. Think of more the mundane, the everyday gifts of his grace and his kindness. So let me give you that minute, and then I'll pray for us, and we're going to sing gratitude together. Be as specific as you can. Father, you are good and you do good. Philippians is right when it says that everything good and perfect comes down from you, the Father of lights. Will you forgive us where we don't see it and don't acknowledge it, where we're aware of all that we don't have or didn't get or are stuck in or at the expense of how good you are to us and all these, like they're just mundane, everyday, simple things that you just lavish, not only upon us, but even upon those who hate you. There is no one like you, no one good like you, no one true like you, no one for us like you. Will you rewire our brains? We are steeping in a culture of cynicism and anger. And what a great apologetic to just be marked by joy and gratitude, to see the silver linings, to give the benefit of the doubt, to enjoy deep connection with others. Make us other than in that way. I thank you that you've given this gift to us this morning, the gift of joy, the invitation to embrace it, the pathway of gratitude and gladness, to be marked by such things, to have lives that just emanate these things. We'll sing to you now a song of praise. You're so good. The English language fails to capture all that you are and all that you've done, but we give our heart to you this morning in song, and it's for your beautiful name I pray. Amen.